Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness. My name is John Kutzmita, and every week we are joined by Brent Johnson, the man behind the Dollar Milkshake Theory. If you are unfamiliar with what that is, you can learn more at our website at milkshakespod.com. Also, we encourage you to go to YouTube and visit our channel at Milkshakes Pod, and at the top, you will see a playlist that says Start Here. There's a handful of videos which we believe will help you better understand what the Dollar Milkshake Theory is actually trying to say. Now, speaking of YouTube, we have a bit of a community starting to grow there. We greatly appreciate the feedback and comments. Please don't stop telling us how much you like the show. Of course, it means a lot to us. But we are starting to see people get comfortable and share their own thoughts on markets. So please join in that discussion. If you have an idea, share it. If you see a comment that you want to push back on, get into, you know, sharing ideas amongst each other. Brent and I are very open on the show about not having a crystal ball. No one knows the future, and we're all here trying to figure it out, and we believe there is plenty of value in your perspectives and viewpoints. So please share those on the YouTube channel. Again, if you go to YouTube, we are at Milkshakes Pod. Now this week, we talk about markets, we talk about violently sideways, which has been a theme all year, and potentially could be the theme of 2023. Now, Brent has been open about his defensive posture lately. He has some puts on. He's expecting a correction. We talk about that. This feels very much like another one of those heavily resented or heavily hated bull markets. And I kind of present some thoughts or narratives as to why that bull market might just continue longer. So for those who like to see Brent struggle a little bit, maybe you will enjoy this podcast a bit more, because we do challenge some of his short-term views. And for those looking to try to make sense of where the market could possibly go, I think we present various situations on both sides of the story. So hopefully, as I mentioned, a conversation like this will stimulate discussion in the comments. So we look forward to seeing your thoughts there. So let's get started with another episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness.
I drink your milkshake.
Back to Milkshakes Markets Madness. It's the cheesesteak episode. I'm in Jersey. I got my Philadelphia sports apparel on. I'm feeling the vibes for 4th of July. You have been noted as someone that would probably be a top button man. So here you are.
There you go.
Supporting that thesis.
User comment.
User comments. We're following the marching orders from the crowd, from the Milkshake Madness crowd. What do you got going on for the 4th? Anything?
My son is on a very good volleyball team here in Puerto Rico. So volleyball is a huge sport here. And he got recruited to play on this club team, which is very good. He's gotten a lot better over the last year, but his team is very good. They won the national tournament last year, and so they just flew today. I'm going to go meet them tomorrow, and they've got to try and defend their title at the national tournament. So we'll see how it goes.
So you're going to be in Orlando, Florida.
There you go.
So any Mickey Mouse action in the markets recently? It feels very violently sideways. Are we about ready to just give up on anything exciting in 2023?
It's amazing. It just keeps doing this. Like this violently sideways. You know, we started talking about this in January. No, we started talking about it in February because the market went up hard in January. And then it went sideways for 6 weeks. And we called it violently sideways. And I thought that would just kind of be a one-time thing we talked about. But here we are. And, you know, I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I usually almost have hedges of some kind or some dry powder or something in case something happens. And I just thought that everything had got ahead of itself. Sentiment was very high. Positioning was no longer extremely in favor of the bulls. And so I went net short, so far it's turned out to be right. That was the high. The timing was good. However, we haven't really had much of a pullback, and I think it pulled back 2 or 3% and then it rallied 1%. And so it's kind of gone violently sideways for the last 2 weeks. And, you know, I'm sitting here watching premium decay on the hedges that I bought, or the puts that I bought. And we're still in good shape, but you know, it's just one of those things where you just wait and wait and wait. And to your point, is anything ever going to happen? And you know, I'm not a perma bear, so I'm not somebody who says it has to fall down. I just think it will. And you know, to see this continual bid in the market, you know, for somebody who's been doing this for early, Tom, it's kind of impressive to see. Like I said, I think we need a pullback. I think we need to kind of reset everything to kind of provide that fuel to then go to new highs. But people who have been calling for this all year, it just hasn't happened yet. And I'm not sure what's going to cause it. There's a lot of data that gets released tomorrow morning. So tomorrow morning, there's a lot of data that gets released. We've got a Friday. It's the summer. It's heading into the holiday weekend. Probably won't be as many people at their desk as there normally would be. Maybe it won't be as much liquidity. It's the quarter end, so people will be dressing up their statements. But you're in, you know, tomorrow has the potential to be an interesting day.
So it's like that stick figure meme where he's like poking at whatever is in the meme and saying, come on, do something.
It's kind of
been the market slightly. You know, we're recording on a Thursday. It's a holiday weekend, so we're kind of trying to fit it into things. You mentioned a number of data points that, you know, are on deck for tomorrow. It's also quarter end. There's rebalancing. We talked about that last week. But let's go out on a limb and say there's probably not going to be a whole lot of fireworks that would send the market in some sort of massive melt up or meltdown. We don't know. Maybe. But let's just go off of that concept. What we do have, though, as of today, Thursday, is we had a GDP... this is the third for Q2, so it's kind of the final revision, and it was a bit of a, you know, an outlier there as far as standard deviations and revisions go. So GDP was bumped up a fair amount, and yeah. It seemed like that added some momentarily added volatility, but we mainly just saw it in the bond market, and yeah. You know, there's the CPI or the PCE component was relatively flat. But without getting super deep into some of the granular aspects and then trying to fit that into one person's bias or another, it does feel like the Fed is backed into the corner a little bit more after that GDP print. Given what the inflation data was, and overall, if you've got a growing economy, you know, maybe they stay sideways for one more month, and then if we keep getting data like this, I feel like it's another.
Well, yeah, the interesting thing I've seen is that the data that's come out kind of since over the last two weeks, it hasn't been excessively great, which would be hawkish for the markets, but it hasn't been excessively bad either. Again, it's been, in my opinion, for the most part, pretty favorable data, pretty good data, which in my mind would mean that the Fed is still going to hike and markets would not be expecting them to stop. But, you know, every time a piece of data has come out, even if it was slightly good, the market has, you know, maybe it's traded off for a few minutes or a few hours, but it's just recovered very quickly. I think part of it, and this just could be me speculating here, but I think part of it is that, in my opinion, Powell's tone has changed. And what I mean by that is I think I've said several times on this show that Powell has probably been the most clearly spoken central banker that I've seen. And whether you agree with him or you don't agree with him, there's not much mystery in what he's saying he's planning to do. And I still think that's the case. He is still pretty clear about what he's saying, but the manner in which he says it has changed. So last year, he was extremely hawkish, and he kept telling people, I'm going to raise rates, and everybody didn't believe him, and he kept doing it. And he was, you know, he would make hawkish, very hawkish statements, but he would also, his tone was very kind of aggressive, I guess, for lack of a better way of saying it. And so since basically all year, he has continued to say that they plan to get higher rates. And But he started saying, but we're getting closer to the end. And as we get closer to the end, we don't need to go as fast. And so I think people have started to just assume that that means that they're going to stop and that they're going to cut. And I think that the market is misinterpreting that. I think he is still going to raise. I think he still does plan to remain tight policy, but I can understand why the market is kind of not listening to him, because his tone, in my opinion, has definitely changed, and he's not quite as clear. And I'll give you a good example. He spoke yesterday or 2 days ago. There's a central banker conference in Europe, and all the central bankers go to it. And they had the Bank of Japan, the Bank of England, the ECB, and Powell. They were all on stage, and I think it was Bloomberg was doing the moderation. And they kept trying to give him the opportunity to be very hawkish, and he just wouldn't take the bait. And they asked him over and over again. They almost put words in his mouth. And he wasn't dovish. And his answers were, in my opinion, hawkish, but he was very soft and meek about it. And so if he wanted to smash the markets, they give him every opportunity to do it, and he didn't do it. So to me, there's been a little, I can understand why the confusion, or maybe the misinterpretation, in my opinion, is starting to creep in. There was even one point where the moderator, I don't remember what her name was, the moderator asked Powell, so how long do you think before the first cut will be? Well, I think she asked Lagarde that, and Lagarde said sometime in 24. And then they asked Powell, is that when you expect to it? He said, no, I don't expect another cut until 25. And everybody's kind of surprised by that. Oh, really? And then she goes, so you're going to be really tight for a lot longer. And he said, well, no. So, you know, he's talking about not cutting rates until 2025. But then when given the opportunity to confirm that he planned to keep policy tight for another year and a half, he didn't say yes. He said no. He said, we're going to just have to wait and see. So I don't know if he's trying to massage it, or if he himself is not sure or what, because to me, he is not quite as clear as he used to be. His words are still clear, but his intentions are not as clear as they used to be. So, again, maybe I'm reading too much into this, but that's been my observation.
Yeah, you sound like a guy going through a breakup, and he just won't accept that the girl won't talk to him anymore. Yeah. We talked about early on, I think it might have been like the first two episodes of this year, something like that. That's how far back it goes. We are putting a lot of focus or emphasis on the fact that everyone keeps putting a lot of focus and emphasis on central bankers and what they're saying. Yeah. Last week, you quoted John Burbank as far as the idea that price is a liar. Well, I think central banks are a liar. And, you know, hearing you kind of talk about the tone and the hawkishness of it, and you've kind of done so a couple times, it kind of gets exhausting, because I'm sitting here wondering, at this point where a lot of the question is off the table. And when I say question, I mean, so there's a lot that they can do. They can stay paused, they can hike, they can go lower. These various they're all kind of pivots at this point since they've paused. But why do we care if the fundamentals of the market generally seems strong? I mean, we all want to sit here and bash the Fed for not knowing what they're doing, and they're using lagging indicators, and it feels like the market's, you know, it's the tail wagging the dog type of thing, right? So if GDP is strong, most asset markets, from whether it be multiple or some other type of measurement, they're not like cheap, but they certainly aren't ridiculous. Maybe the NASDAQ and some of the tech stuff, but even that's cooling off a bit. Oil is, you know, nothing to be concerned about. It's just hanging out in the seven handle. So where do we look? Are we, and I kind of proposed this last week, the question of what we're all, I know you've got this premium bleed going with the puts. And so deep down, you're just hoping for a little bit of action on the negative side. But what if it's, you know, it's summer, and what if this is just the story of 2023? What if violently sideways isn't even violent anymore? Maybe it's just boringly sideways.
So I am the first to say that that's actually possible. And before we're done today, I'll give you a reason of why it could happen. Now, again, I'm not changing my opinion. I still think that we are going to have a correction. And whether we go back to the lows of last year or not, I don't know. But I think we do need to have a pullback in order to kind of reset sentiment a little bit to then give it the fuel to then take out those all-time highs. Okay. Now, if and when we do get that correction, it will depend on why we get it and what the reasons were, whether I, you know, change my opinion at that time or not, because you kind of, you have to change your mind if you get new information. But as of now, I'm inclined to be a buyer of a pullback or a buyer of a move to back to last year's levels. Again, I'm not somebody who thinks that we're going to have this 4 or 5 year Great Depression 2.0 type event. But I'll tell you why I'm staying with this theme of we are going to get the correction and then I'll reassess rather than going into, no, we're heading to all-time highs right now. And then I'll also tell you why I think it's possible, though, we go to all-time highs. Okay, so in general, in my opinion, the thing that moves markets is liquidity. If there is lots of liquidity and you then the Fed is easing or at least not further tightening and is not actively working against you, then it's easier to be long assets. So think of after 2008 or after 2020, you know, the Fed's doing QE, they're providing liquidity, there's a tailwind, right? And so that helps all, everything else being equal, that helps. Now the vice versa is true as well, is that if they are not providing liquidity and they're not providing you that tailwind, then it's a headwind, right? And that's, you're going to have some special things in place in order to overcome that headwind now that the Fed or monetary policy or whatever is putting against you. And so I think for the last, so last year we definitely had a headwind, no question. Tight monetary policy, rapidly increasing interest rates. The Fed was definitely trying to slow down the economy. Now, starting in about November or December, they're still providing the headwind, but they're not blowing as hard, right? They're not pushing as hard as they were before. And people have started to anticipate not only they're not being a headwind, but they're flipping to being a tailwind. And along the same time, we had this, in my opinion, extra liquidity. I mean, I don't know if I'll say excess liquidity, but extra liquidity that wouldn't otherwise been to be there. And what I mean by that is, I think if Powell had his own way, asset prices wouldn't be as high as they are right now. I think he wanted to, I think he would have preferred that the market wasn't quite as high as it is now, because I think that would have helped him curb his inflation a little quicker. But with, we've talked about this before, with the, with being up against the debt ceiling, that was a tailwind for liquidity because the Treasury could not issue bonds, right? And so they were drawing down the TGA account. They're taking the money out of the TGA account and put it into the public's account. Usually when that happens, they're rebuilding the TGA at the same time, so they're draining some of that money back. But because of the debt ceiling, they weren't do that. So for the last 6 months, you had a slowing headwind from the Fed and you had a tailwind from the Treasury Department. So in my opinion, there was somewhat of a tailwind actually, because I think the Treasury, the lack of Treasury issuance kind of more than offset the slower pace of rate hikes that Powell was doing. I don't think that's going to be this case in the second half of the year. Now, the Treasury, in my opinion, is going to rapidly rebuild up that TGA because they don't want this to happen again. They don't want to be down there at the bottom and be scraping the bottom of the barrel. So I think they will probably rapidly, you know, issue Treasury bonds and suck capital out of the market when they do that. So I think that will be a headwind. I think Powell will continue to raise rates unless the markets make him stop. So all things being equal, I think he still raises in July, and I think he raises again in September. I think the only way he doesn't raise in July is if the markets correct really hard between now and then. And I think the only way he doesn't raise in September is if the markets correct really hard sometime between now and then. And then the other thing is that at some point, I think it's August or September, the student loan deferments that have been in place for 3 years now, are going to expire. And so there's been a number of surveys done that have shown that people are saying that's going to be a real problem for them. You know, the money that they were normally spending into the economy is now going to be going to service student loan debt. So that's another headwind. And then the other thing is that now we are 15 months into the rate hikes. And, you know, we've talked about this several times. A lot of times it takes a year, year and a half for rate hikes to show up in the market because, you know, people already had, you know, lines of credit or loans. And now as they're starting to come due, they're getting refinanced rather than, you know, when rates were at 0.5%, now rates are at 5.5%. I mean, that's going to be a big jump when people have to refinance, right? So then that's a headwind. So those are all the, and then because, you know, just a couple weeks ago, sentiment was super high. So all of those are the reasons why I think we need to have a pullback, and that's why I'm positioned as such. Now I can tell you why I think I could be wrong, if you want to hear that part of it.
Well, I want to hear your all-time, you're going to share your thoughts on why this eventually leads to all-time highs. Is it just a swing back of that?
So the reason I think we're eventually going to go to all-time highs, there's two ways I think we could go to all-time highs. Is we could have this pullback, we could have a small pullback in the U.S. and then things go to all-time highs. We could just go to all-time highs, or we could have kind of a severe pullback kind of globally and then go to all-time highs. And I'll tell you why all three of those, why I think it lead to all-time highs is if we get a severe pullback, then the world will move back to quantitative easing or some kind of liquidity providing bailouts, et cetera, and we'll be back to that tailwind. And I think when that happens, the U.S. will, this is my whole theory, right? In a crisis, the dollar will get bid, people will go into the dollar, they'll go into the dollar, and then they'll go into U.S. assets. And I think that will push markets higher. But if we don't get that severe correction where it forces them to pivot, and rather we just kind of have either a small pullback or no pullback at all, and then higher. The reason I think that could happen is because there's a lot of money that is still in the market. And if we don't have a credit event that makes money disappear, you know, we've talked about the way money gets created is it's loaned into existence. If it stops circulating and it starts to contract, then it kind of feeds on itself and you get this massive contraction. Well, if we don't get one of those that makes money disappear and all the money that is out there is just still existing, and we continue to not hit the wall, the reason I think that we could go to all-time highs is because those higher rates, we've talked about this before, is putting more money into the market. The people that are owning treasuries, the people that are owning fixed income that are now getting issued at higher rates, even just in their savings accounts. Like you can get a money market fund now that pays close to 5%. And so that money is until you hit the wall, that money is stimulative because it's more money going into the public's pockets. The other thing is that if they keep rates at this level, it doesn't have to go higher, and they could even cut them a little bit. I mean, I think you really have to think about this. Like rates are 10x higher than they were 2 years ago or a year and a half ago. I mean, they could cut rates by half and they're still up dramatically, right? So if they just keep rates at this level, that is a big vacuum that sucks capital into the United States. Our rates here are dramatically higher than other places in the world, other than places that are a lot riskier than the United States. But now you can own a U.S. Treasury, the collateral which underlies the whole system, and it pays you 5% or more than 5%. That's pretty attractive, especially if you're somewhere that isn't paying that high of a return and is in a riskier currency. So I think that draws capital to the United States. And then the government is going to continue to run budget deficits. You look at the budget. I don't know what the budget deficit is this year. But, you know, a year ago, they were showing it that Biden did this big, you know, budget cut, but it was basically just because it wasn't as big as it was during the COVID years. But now, you know, going forward again, they start increasing again. So the government is going to keep spending money. Well, in an environment where the government is spending money, they're putting money into the economy, interest rates are high to draw more capital into the economy. You got oil at $65 or $70. It's not restrictive. You can actually get a boom in that environment. And so if that takes place, I could see assets going back to all-time highs. And again, that's not my base case right now, but I understand how I could be wrong. And if I am wrong, I think it will be some form of that reasoning.
Yeah, there's nothing you just shared there that makes me uncomfortable about the outlook. in the next 90 days, the next 6 months. And I get the inverted yield curves and all the things that make, we talked about this last week, the bearish narrative is always so intoxicating.
Yeah.
But I think about it outside of this, this kind of new paradigm that we've had since the GFC, especially, you know, the fiscal and monetary response during the pandemic. But if we go outside of those two events, and maybe even before the dot-com bust, I'm not like the greatest financial historian ever, but you know, what the Fed would do in terms of monetary policy, the overnight lending rate, I don't think people paid a lot of attention, and it was kind of like toying with the thermostat in the slightest type of way. And I would use, let's say 500 basis points, which is roughly where we're at now. Let's pretend that's the new baseline.
Yeah.
So for those who try to, you know, follow along mathematically in their brain, pretend that's zero. So if the Fed was technically at zero and they told you, they weren't giving you any kind of sense that they were going to start going on a rapid rate hiking cycle. The economic data wasn't suggesting that they would. And the opposite of that, there's no reason why you would think they would cut dramatically, and the economic data wasn't suggesting it. If the Fed came out and said, hey, we're going to go from zero to 25 basis points, you'd just go, nice deep yawn and go back to your day.
Yep.
So I kind of feel like that's more where we are right now. It's a bit more of a yawn because you've now set this new benchmark. I get 5.25, 550, 575. On the Fed funds is a big deal when you look at where we were 12 months ago, but it's not a big deal when you look at where we are a month ago or 2 months ago. And so potentially where we're at right now is in cruise control. And I know everybody wants there to be a crash. Everyone has a bias because they hate real estate prices or they hate stock prices or, you know, the oil should be 300 because of all these different reasons. I get it. Those narratives, like we were talking about, are very intoxicating. But I kind of feel like, given the current situation, you know, leading into 2022, everyone beat up on the Fed because, duh, of course we're going to have inflation. Look what you did. You've been overstimulating for, you know, 12 months. Enough with the bond buying and the mortgage-backed securities. Now it's like, well, duh, of course the Fed had to do this to put out that fire. It reminds me of another meme, which is that classic two button meme when the guy's like all sweating and he's trying to make a decision.
Yeah.
I feel like the Fed, Powell has been there for so long. Now he's just kind of like frozen. I don't think he has to make a decision.
Yeah.
And if he does raise 0.25%, does the market care? If he cuts, I think there'd be more of a knee jerk reaction simply because it would be seen potentially as a pivot.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I guess with that rant coming to an end, throwing it back to you, if you were Jerome Powell and you were in this place, wouldn't you feel pretty good? And at this point, would you even be thinking about making any decision? Would you just kind of take a break from decision making in general and let the market kind of hum?
Well, I think that's kind of what he's doing. And so I don't blame him for doing it. You know, I kind of get it. And again, I am not a fan of central bankers. I feel like I'm a pretty big central bank critic, but you know, I'm not one of these people who goes out and shakes their fist every day. The Fed should not exist. Even though I may feel that, it does me no good to shake my fist at, because the Fed is always going, it's not necessarily always going to exist, but it's not going to disappear in the next 6 months, right? And if it does appear in this next 6 months, it's because the whole world's on fire. And so it's kind of a waste of time for me to go out and, you know, say the Fed shouldn't exist. I need to focus my time on figuring out what they're going to do more than whether they should even have the ability to do it or not. So I tend to agree with you. And all the people who a year ago said that he was going to create this disaster, well, listen, I'm still not saying he might. This is probably going to end badly. But so far, he's done it, right? I mean, so far, he's pulled it off. And, you know, from a certain point of view, you have to kind of give him credit for it. And so if you are somebody who believes in Keynesian economics and you believe that governments should try to regulate the business cycle in order to provide the best environment for growth and safety and all that kind of stuff, if that's your point of view, I think you have to look at Powell and say he's done a pretty good job, right? Now, if you don't have that view, then that's fine as well. But again, you know, I think you got to measure him based on how you know, those who support his position would try to measure him. You know, the one thing we haven't talked yet about John is, and it's fun, this kind of shows you how, this is kind of quintessential for 2023, actually, is think about what happened last Saturday. We haven't even talked about that yet. In some ways, people have forgot about it, like the coup, no coup in Russia, right? I mean, on Friday, when we were talking, you know, that had just kind of started to percolate a little bit. Maybe something's going on in Russia. Well, by 12 hours later, Saturday morning, you know, everybody on Twitter already knew exactly what was going on. Their theory was right. And it's funny because I don't remember. I think it started Friday night. And I sent something out on Friday night saying, I don't know what's going on, but I know it's not nothing. There was enough information that you just knew something was going on. And then a couple more times over the weekend, Saturday, maybe on Sunday, I said, listen, I still don't know what happened. I'm interested. And I had so many people that were like, oh, it's a total psyop. This was planned by Putin, this 3D chess. He is the smartest guy ever. And this was a secret way to move troops from the south of, you know, the Ukraine over to Belarus. And now they're going to be able to take Kiev. And again, there's all these different theories of what was going on. And, you know, my point on Sunday was I just haven't heard any. Maybe it is a psyop. I I don't know. Maybe it is. I just haven't had a good theory that explains why Putin would take that risk and make himself at least potentially look weak to the world in order to accomplish. Nobody could give me what he accomplished that was so that was so great that he accomplished this thing that it was worth, you know, potentially people thinking it was real, and now that the Russia is destabilized. And so I think that's just another example of people jumping to conclusions, and they're so certain that they're right. And, you know, the idea that everybody on Twitter figured out what was really going on, but the CIA had no idea, and the White House had no idea, and this was a sneaky move that the chess masters pulled the wool over the eyes of the checkers players. And I find the whole thing fascinating. I mean, I think one of the most destabilizing things in the world is if Putin was removed, to be honest, because then who's in charge? You know, it's something like that pops up again, I think all bets are off.
Well, unfortunately, it was another snoozer. Nothing really came of it.
No, exactly.
Speaking of more memes, one of the funniest ones for me around that whole event was like something about how to make $6 billion in a day or something like that. Now I get yeah. It's just a meme. I don't really think the people putting those out there are making the case for that. But some people kind of rallied around that, like, oh, you know, they took this $6 billion that was laundered into Ukraine and it was a payoff, and then, you know, they just pretended to do this coup. And like Putin does not care about $6 billion. You want to talk about 3D chess. That's not even a pawn on the chessboard that he's playing with.
Well, then why would they want dollars, John? Billion dollars?
Brent,
they don't need dollars.
We're 30 minutes in, man. We can't get into this. But I did actually share a video from one of our followers that was talking about the dollar shortage and the euro dollar, and it was involving Pakistan and Kenya. So I've upgraded the BRICS to the pricks, so we can kind of roll with that for a little bit.
I had not heard that. That's a good one.
And look, on that note, I think we've given enough fodder to the people who watch this show. I think we were kind of patting central bankers on the back as best as anybody could, which hopefully irritates some of you and you can tell us how dumb we are. But hey, we're just trying to make sense of it. And I know some of you out there have already made sense of it all. So please let us know in the comments what we've got wrong, how good Brent looks with the top button buttoned, and what you think is going to happen in markets next, because we still can't quite figure it out. But we've given Jerome Powell a pass for now, going into the 4th of July weekend. You all deserve a pass. We all deserve a minute to take a break from what has been a pretty chaotic, although violently sideways, market for 2023 so far. So I hope all of you have a good 4th of July weekend. If you're new to the show and you want to learn a little bit more about us and the Dollar Milkshake Theory, at the top of our YouTube page, you'll see a playlist that says start here. There's a couple of videos that will take you down that rabbit hole. You can follow Brent Johnson on Twitter at Santiago AU Fund. You can follow me at John Kutzmita. And you can follow our show on YouTube and Twitter and everywhere else at Milkshakes Pod. And our website is milkshakespod.com. Brent, that does it. There's all our handles and URLs and where to find us. You got any last words before we head into the 4th of July weekend?
No, just everybody have fun, stay safe, and we'll talk to you next week.
And don't plan any coups. All right, man. Nope, I'll talk to you soon.
All right, buddy. See ya.
This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.